Hello and welcome to This Might Be The News. My name's Rory and this week I'm joined by my friend Sophie.
Hi.
And my friend Alex.
Yeah, hi.
How'd that election work out for you, Alex?
Yeah, no, I'm still licking my wounds and trying to stay in my basement for as long as possible.
Do we even know what's happening now?
Ian Paisley's back, that's all you need to know.
Does he
wear a Paisley shirt every day?
Do you know who Ian Paisley is, Sophie?
No.
Alex, you're the only person I know that is happy about the DUP being back on the scene.
I told you this previously. This wasn't a manifesto for me and my gang. This was an attempt to centralise the party and to lose a lot of its grassroots credibility. And now the attempt to do that has failed, so we get Paisley instead. And that's fine, absolutely fine by me.
What do you and your gang look like if you're going on a night out?
Yeah, we're not, you know, there's a lot of glasses, there's a lot of frowns, you know, sort of quite...
Loppy hair.
Yeah, sort of, no, very slicked back hair with like a number one on the sides and, you know, sort of baleful glares into the horizon.
What's like, is there like a secret handshake that you do, like when you meet
like
someone?
Like a parent trap?
Someone, not, don't, stop mentioning the parent trap.
I love it, I want to learn it.
It's like, how do you know when you spot another one of you, like one of your gang?
You know, normally you just glance at the armband, but within a short few sentences you can get a fairly clear idea. You know, there'll be wonderful buzzwords. I don't know, family unit, heritage, flat tax,
flat tax,
you know, just normal questions you'll ask someone, you know, straight after, what's your name. You get a, it's like anything, you just feel an empathy, don't you?
You don't do ASL, it's just like, what's ASL? Your heritage? Age, sex, location? Do you remember?
Oh, I thought you were going like arse to mouth or something. I didn't know what was going on.
That'd be a different anagram.
Sorry, yeah, no, just dyslexia, wheeling its hand. Anyway.
Well, we start every podcast with a feature, Alex. It's called The Facts.
Facts.
The fact. So, this isn't going to be a classic funny fact, but the thing is, the biggest story of this week was obviously Grenfell Tower fire disaster. But I think as a podcast that's based on the news and the biggest news stories, we have to try and tackle it and we'll talk about it. And then
there was like nothing else in the news but it.
No.
Really.
And yet you were still doing your reading of the news 5 minutes before we...
I mean, I'd just like to say I've got a very busy life. I did catch it, actually, in the week when it all happened. I was out in Surrey, and one of the people I'm working with was up all night because he could see it from Camberley.
Jesus.
That's how...
So it was huge, and it's I think it's like, because fire is visually very effective, and so I think like an emotional, so like it's really had an effect on the nation's mood, especially if you live in London. So we'll start with the facts, and then we'll start talking about stuff. So we know Wednesday night, 1 a.m., just before 1 a.m., this fire breaks out.
Yeah, 12:53.
Yeah, the fire brigade were there
in 6 minutes.
Within 6 minutes,
absolutely. These are all good facts.
Yeah.
And I think most of us sort of woke up to this, and it was kind of played down by the media in some way.
It took a while for news to get out there, didn't it?
I'm trying to plant a conspiracy, Alex, because I know you're going to be calling me out as a Guardian reader within moments. But obviously the media, everyone across the board, was saying like six dead, six dead, some people missing. It was all very kind of, but then you'd see interviews with people and it's like, well, there are a few hundred people in that flat.
We tried to work it out if there's four people per flat and four flats per story and 26 stories or something? Mm.
24 stories.
24 stories.
Another fact.
Okay.
So 24 stories and the fire broke out on the fourth floor. So...
Yeah.
So your gut would be, it's probably not six people that have died in this thing, as you're hearing.
No, and especially as it like, it went like, boom.
Yeah, and it went up. And so what was mad about it was that it also, it took 36 hours.
Yeah, I don't know, that was a fact.
You just said that to me. That's a non-fact.
It's a non-fact, but it took between 24 and 48 hours for it even to stop.
And that was kind of like when people, like, so the first day, Wednesday was kind of a... we talked about this earlier, Alex, the whole, like, the way people react to a disaster. So the first bit was shock. And so Wednesday day was spent, everyone in shock, but also confused because the information clearly wasn't getting to us about what was actually happening. But what was striking was that it got to 10 p.m. or whatever, and everyone was watching the 10 o'clock news, and the fire's still going on. And that's not something that we're used to, being in the, like, the Western world, and like
I think that's right.
If you get what I mean?
No, I think you know, yeah. If we were discussing this before, it follows a similar sequence to you know, a terrorist attack, insofar as total shock, fear, you know, concern over the individuals affected, and then obviously moves on to anger. And with this, it was sort of protracted because, yeah, the death toll was relatively low, but yet the fire was still burning and there were so many questions, there was so much concern and desire to help, and none of it seems to be particularly organised. And it just sort of, I think it's fueled this this anger, which obviously which was going to be inevitable, but I think it's been made all the worse by, as you say, that kind of, the media playing it down to some extent, potentially.
We just watched it. You just watched it for hours and hours. You just watched it carrying on burning. You watched it not knowing, and no one, you know, obviously the fire brigade, I think, you know, were pushed. And I don't know what they could have done more. I'm not aware of, like...
And it's just, like, and it was tragic story after tragic story, and you're hearing just these awful, like, examples of people calling from the building, their families,
leaving these
sort of final testimonies almost, and it's horrific. But then the other sort of, the sort of theme that seems to be coming across, and it's very reminiscent of the terror attacks, is whenever you speak to firemen, them saying, we're exhausted, we're under-resourced, we're supposed to do fires like this in 4-hour blasts and then take a break, and we've been going for 12 hours, and there was the photos of them all passed out. And so, and this is reminiscent when, like, so the with the terror attacks, obviously they're pushing Cressida Dick on there, say, like, is this because of cuts, like, is this why terrorism? She said, I don't want to politicize it, but wink we've had
a lot of cuts.
Okay, we've had a lot of cuts.
Sure. I mean, obviously, if you say to any civil servant, if I gave you more money, could you have done better? They're going to say yes, because they want more funding and they want more money. So that's not, I don't blame them. I wouldn't necessarily, that such individuals say that they're politicising it. They're just making a rational play to improve the lot of their department. That's perfectly fair and just, particularly for something as now obviously emotionally charged as the fire services. But Boris Johnson, you know, there were some cuts as far as I recall, but they've redistributed it. And it's not like this is as far as I see it, this is an awful tragedy in isolation. It's not symbolic. It's not representative. It's just a unique set of circumstances with, I'm sure, some kind of human error, some kind of oversights, which have all aligned together to result in obviously this absolutely appalling.
Like, if you were going to put down, obviously everyone out there is like trying to blame someone or put it down to something. What do you put it? You can't put it down to a freakish accident. Then there are roots which come from somewhere. Where do you think it's come from?
Well, I do actually think it is. It's like, you know, you're giving me two camps which are quite sort of like strong. I would say somewhere in the middle. Like, yeah, it's obviously an accident, and it's obviously the degree to which the outcome has happened has been in the main affected by, you know, resources which were available. But those resources were made. I mean, if you want to talk the money about it, you know, they spent 8.7, I think it was, million pounds on this building. It's in when they refurbed it in 2014, and if you and it's not like the money wasn't available. As soon as Theresa May went to the site, which I know obviously Roy wants to discuss, £5 million was made available in terms of actions, in terms of money, which is what government is about. Those things have been made available and have been provided. It's just its distribution has been.
So I have to make make the counter arguments here on those points. So on the refurb. And I think
which finished in May 2016, wasn't it? Not even long ago.
Fact.
A year ago. Fact from Sophie.
But this is where I think everyone starts to not have a full clue of what we're talking about here. But the counter argument is that the refurbishment was entirely aesthetic, and sort of generally to please Kensington the borough to make this sort of eyesore.
Passable, so, sure.
Yeah.
That's not true, though, is it? Because the whole point of rain screen cladding, which is what they put in, which is a very expensive system, by the way, they could have used cheaper ones, is to thermally insulate the property to reduce the tenants' energy bills, which obviously directly would aid them. And if you break down, I think, 8.7 million, it's something like £75,000 per unit was spent on the refurb. Yes, it could have been allocated better, but it's not a question of, poor doors, we've got a poor house in the middle of Kensington where everyone's just ignoring it. No, they tried to do
something. What about the fact that they didn't have fire alarm systems that work or sprinkler systems that work, like, and there were complaints before there? and no one came back on that.
Well, okay, if you want to politicise those specific things, I'm saying, like, obviously there's been things that have gone wrong and have been overlooked, but that happens in any system, in any company, whether it be public or private, that's what happens. But the current MP for Kensington is Emma Dent Code.
She came in off like 20
votes. Sure, but she was also on the board of Kensington and Chelsea's council during the refurb. So it's, you know, it's not a, you can't just be like, this is a blue issue, this is a Tory issue. Like, it's been a long, the process of housing and how it works and the route by which resources are distributed by the state has been a long-standing process. You can't just be like, that's Tories, that's cuts.
I'm not saying that it's like Tories or cuts, but I think the guy that was in charge of the housing association, the tenancy agreement, he resigned 3 years ago because of the fact that he said this building's unsafe, we need to sort it out. And he resigned because nothing was getting done about it. Now, when someone's resigning years before this even happens, whether it's, you know, fuck whichever political party it is.
Sure.
Who's being held responsible? Who? Why is that someone else that stepped up? Are they ignoring that those things that he resigned on? That's a pretty big thing for someone to stand down because of something that's not being actioned.
Mm. And as you say, like, when people are angry, the people are looking for causes and they're scrambling for causes. Yeah. And the word cladding.
They want meaning, don't they?
The word
meaning
cladding to something has been said a lot, and I don't know what cladding is, but I'm very angry about it, and I'm mad as hell about this cladding.
Tear it all down.
And Wheeler, you work in bricks, don't you? So
you know, what is cladding? Is it like a cushion for walls?
So yeah, you have an existing structure, in this case concrete, and then you have like a small metal frame which projects out, I don't know, say 100 millimetres, and then that has a bracket. On that bracket sits your thin piece of cladding. Right. Then behind that, you have your insulation. So you're insulating the building to a greater extent. But no, I cladding is, sorry, yeah.
So, because obviously one of the issues is, oh, if they'd have spent £2 more per square metre on the fireproof cladding, the place wouldn't have gone up in flames within whatever it was, like, it's so quickly. I mean, people have been saying it's extraordinary how quickly a fire took hold of a 24-storey building. Mm. But what I will accept is, this is the period where everyone's just grabbing at reasons and causes. We don't know what it's...
Yeah, because they're at a loss for any kind of sense of it.
It could be cladding, it could be a lack of sprinklers, it could be the fact of it, like, anecdotally, people saying the hallways were full of everyone's stuff.
Or the bin chutes weren't clear because people weren't employed to be able to clean them.
I think it's very easy to refine this down into one thing, which is that there will be an inquiry which will establish those elements. We, right here, right now, can't really accurately grapple with them because they don't exist, they're not available to us. All you can discuss really is the political ramification. I'm happy to...
Yeah, we can discuss. Yeah. We can discuss the political ramifications and the response, which is important. So we can talk about the politics of it, because fires happen, and we're referencing the Camberwell fire of 2009 quite a lot in this conversation. Sure. The reason that wasn't the news all week was because it was a different political climate. What I think has happened here is we're so fresh off an election that became ultimately about ideologies for the first time in a long time. It became about, to some extent, and you may argue this, rich versus the poor, it became about definitely a divided nation, a nation divided on many topics, a nation divided on Brexit, and a nation divided on, like, the future of this country, be it the looking after the poor and vulnerable via taxing the rich a bit more, and yeah, while the numbers might not add up, that's like the ultimate philosophy there, versus responsible economics, but a little bit heartless, you might say. And that is the political context for this. And so it's just basically become an extension of the narrative of the Tories are the nasty party. And I don't know, challenge me on that.
I think that's the fact that that's hard to argue against is why it's had so much traction. But I don't think it fully fits, because if you look at, okay, so Kensington and Chelsea went red, became a Labour seat, but then places seats in the North East and the Midlands, which were hitherto Labour, went blue. What it's really about, I don't think, is necessarily ideology. It's just about one factor, which is living standards and how you argue to improve those. You know, Labour are offering through sort of a fairly antiquated class war method, i.e. awaken those lower down the economic spectrum to make them demand change, and then the rest of the other groups will feel pressured to act. That's their route. But then the Tories have kind of discredited themselves to some extent, because Theresa May has effectively said, oh no, well, we're going to slow down austerity. That loses credibility straight away, because our solution to try and enrich people all the way down has been now, we've questioned it voluntarily ourselves. I think that's really what it's about. because wage growth has been very slow. These are the real frustrations. It's not necessarily rich versus poor. It's why have my living standards gone down? And that's not, I don't think that's a rich versus poor sentiment, because there are plenty of skilled middle class people who have been affected by it. Wage growth has been 2%.
Well, and this is, it's about living, and that's what you're saying there, is, and this is all about living this disaster. I think also you've got to think about the way, I don't know, I think people are like, in those disasters and things like that happen, they look at, and this is going, it's not really about her politics, it's about how she reacted in that situation, her going to visit the site and only speaking to the firefighters.
Yeah, but that's a really good point, but I totally reject it, because it depends on what you want out of your leader. Do you want someone who falls to their knees and...
She's not falling to her knees, though. I think her handshake, giving a couple of handshakes, maybe a hug, out to some of the residents is not actually that much to ask. I think her actually talking to the people that it's affecting is not much to ask.
But what politics is really about is about resources and their allocation.
It is, so fair enough.
She's done that.
Yeah, and she's done that, but I don't understand how we wouldn't...
Politics in 2017, ever since Blair, is not just about resource and allocation and efficiency. Blair and
it's about being a human being.
Yes.
And representing the people and being a person.
So there's this, unfortunately for Theresa May, there is a humane element required. And it's why she's so bad for this job in the first place. I'm almost feeling sorry for her this week, and I'm wondering why she didn't just want to be head of the civil service.
I think that's what she wanted.
It's like, how did she end up in politics? I've not seen anyone so badly fitted for being in the public spotlight and under scrutiny on a daily basis. I'm getting to the point of feeling sorry for her, but I don't, because I can't, because she's the horcrux of Thatcher.
Well, you know, might is right.
But let's talk about responses, because she went to the site.
Okay.
Had a look at the building, didn't she?
Yeah.
And then got back in a cab, pretty much.
Okay, yeah, I think...
They were worried, I must say. They were worried about resources being taken from, like, for the protection of her being at that site. They were worried about the resources.
I would love to take that and let me off the hook, but I don't really buy it, because all you have to say is the Queen Dun's gone rocked up and Prince William, you know, was hugging some people. And
even Adele turned up.
Oh, God.
Even Adele turned up.
Yeah, okay, so that isn't a thing. They were using that as a defence in one of the articles.
But at the same time, I don't know how constructive it is having her there in the capacity you refer to, because we know this sequence. As soon as, you know, we're in the anger, what are you going to call it, the rage, the anger phase, any figure of authority, Sadiq Khan was heckled. I forgot the name of the other Tory minister who was there, but never mind. But, you know, anyone who seemed to represent the state and the government and the authority was, you know, heckled.
But let them be heckled and let them stand up and go, take a sense of... They have to... Mm. I'm sorry, just because you're going to get heckled doesn't mean you shouldn't be there. Like, sometimes people need to let that out at something. And in some ways, it was better that Sadiq Khan did that and was heckled. And maybe even a bottle, I think, was thrown, perhaps. But it was brave that he did that, because they needed to say that to him. And it's much better them saying it to his face than being like, where the fuck is he?
Do you remember when Boris was heckled after the riots and he managed to turn the mob with him? He grabbed a broom, started hitting the ground, and by the end, they were shouting, London, London. That's what a politician is.
I can't argue with that. That's why they called Theresa May the Maybot. It was a phrase that came from The Guardian. Now the Tory party has decided actually it's a pretty damn good one. Yeah. You know, she's seen as this kind of dead-eyed, totally utilitarian, functioning metal machine. And she's very difficult to package into empathetic sound bites. She's very difficult to come across anything even closer to someone like Tony
Blair. Her brand
team
must be having a meltdown.
Absolutely. You know, it's not ideal, but she's a dead prime minister walking. We all know it. And it's just, she can't catch a break at the moment. This is just an extension of the frustration which people rightly feel about her election campaign, which I really wasn't happy with, because, you know, as we were just discussing, it's all about living standards. And she gave no sense except for, you know, stick and no carrots. And it was just no good. You can't get behind the idea of having less money. You can't get behind the idea of no change. What Brexit and indeed Jeremy Corbyn's surge of popularity shows is people do not want a marginal incremental increase of the status quo, or a reduction for that matter. It's not good enough. So, and she cannot recognise that, because she's a technocrat. She is a bureaucrat. You know.
And the thing is, her currency is, I'm efficient. I am a swift operator. Mm. I am the person you want in charge when shit hits the fan. And the issue that everyone's had, her lack of humanity and compassion externally aside, is that the reaction from the government has been terrible on this. Like so slow. It's relied very much on like volunteers, a member of the community, any kind of support to the residents of Grenfell. We've seen on the news today that people that have gone to the help centre for the money, and we're seeing shitloads of money. Well, the Evening Standard raised £2 million. Just Giving, I'm seeing millions of pounds being raised, and they're being given rations of £10. Like £10 at a time is what they're being given.
Yeah.
So that is ridiculous, because it's all well and good like raising £5 million, but if they don't get that until 6 months' time when they've filled in a load of forms, they need it right now. And so the whole support system, she's supposed to swoop in and just fucking nail it from supporting these 400, 500 people that are now homeless. And she didn't do that. So it's like, what is your point, Theresa May? If you're not going out hugging people and shaking hands and you're not sorting shit out, where were you?
Yes, but I would argue that the group, though, with justifiable or at least understandable anger and rage, haven't helped themselves. They seem to have tag-teamed in with this being fully politicised, squarely with Momentum and other class war advocating groups, and making it into this physical group, like the River Tiber foaming, storming council offices, marching down the streets. That doesn't, if we're talking about PR, we're talking about how things are presented and marketing and what is, I'm not going to, my empathy isn't going to increase when I see this.
So you don't think they should have stormed the council?
Absolutely not. Civil unrest.
And what happened?
So a load of people stormed the Kensington Council building, basically just saying,
what the fuck have you done? And why has this happened?
Why is nothing happening? Why is no one helping?
Yeah.
These people.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because it's one of those things. So the government haven't really massively helped, or so we can see. But everyone around, it's that same thing of what happened a couple of weeks ago with London Bridge, and that idea of like what happens when shit like this happens, and the fact that the nation have kind of, I know this is like airy fairy and you'll probably laugh at me for this, but reading about people who are like setting up, giving clothes. I mean, I don't know if it's gone around your work, but I've got stuff going around my work about toiletries and all this stuff, and just trying to help out. And they were talking about opening up houses locally, and I think there's a couple of people that have opened up the rich people have opened up apartments so that people can stay in it. I mean, maybe not enough, and I think that that's what Jeremy Corbyn is trying to do, is to try and open up unused houses.
You mean requisition, which is literally taking people's private property off them. I'm actually saying I'm totally against that in terms of this very short conversation, because it sounds quite catchy. It's very interesting, but it is effectively dissolving civilization as we have understood it for hundreds of years.
I think that was an example, though, that people have latched on. He was basically saying that in an emergency, nothing should be off the table. And it should, like, the absolute priority should be that within 24 hours, these people should be
in home.
To use the example of, like, when it happens with a delayed flight, the airline sorts out a hotel for you that night. Yeah. How did that not happen? Like, for...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
He's saying that, like, so nothing should be on the table, as in, we should grab a house, that place, for a week.
Also, how many people? 400 people?
Yeah.
Like, if you had an office full of 400 people and you got three people on it for 24 hours, they could all rehouse, you could, Airbnb, other places, you could all find places for these people to go. So why hasn't that been done? Whether that's someone volunteering in an apartment, whether that's them paying for someone to be there. That's what's kind of weird.
But I think you're like, this is kind of all part of it. People have such like high expectations of what the state is supposed to do. The fact that this is an exceptional situation where there's obviously no notice for, as you say, these 400 families or individuals, it hasn't got it's not something that happens very often. There isn't precedent for it. And when it does happen, a fast reaction isn't necessarily that easy to achieve, particularly, and which I will accept, in a housing system which is at breaking point and totally stretched. There isn't stock to put them in. It's a very difficult situation. But again, we can argue why that state of play is here today. And it's, for me, it's very painfully obvious. So it's just difficult.
It doesn't feel like they're managing them, though. Like, if you put it in your head and you were like the office manager of these 400 people and you suddenly had to rehouse them, make sure they had enough stuff to keep them going for a week, a number of people, a team of five people probably working through could do that if they had the resources. And now we've got, there are resources because there's all this money being raised, and it's kind of like,
I actually don't agree with that. I don't think it's just about how it's just about resources. Those are obviously very important, but actually, a friend of mine worked for Barnet Housing Association, and the process is just so when you have, for example, take a refugee family of, you know, husband and wife and three children, so five dependents in total, to find them one property. The process that is engaged with is that they'll have a choice of three options and they've got to make it, they've got to find that stock. It takes time. It's not something you can just snap your fingers and it's going to happen.
But you're not going to have options in this scenario. You're just going to have a roof over your head. You can't expect anything more than that.
It's all well and good to... But fine, I mean, it's all well and good to put someone in... It's a question of healing the symptom and then dealing with the cause. If there isn't housing stock to put them in later, obviously the government are in this hamstrung situation where, yes, they need to act now. Well, what are they going to do with these people where there isn't going to be housing?
Well, I think you can figure that out in like a week or two time when everything has calmed down. Well, that's another conversation, but short-term need a short-term and then a long-term.
That's
the long-term is still to... Also, the long-term is going to come out a bit more when we have this investigation. I think what you said at the beginning, we were completely right. We can't make any judgments until a full investigation is done on all of it.
Yeah, and I do agree with you, Alex, that this has been politicised more than it should have been. But no one can argue with the fact that this has been a political disaster for Theresa May.
Yeah,
closing points from you both.
Yeah, no, I would say I totally agree with that. And I actually, in terms of this pattern and this overlap with terrorism, it follows that same sequence and this desire for someone to blame. With terrorism, it's very clear who it is to blame. You can then try and latch on other political elements. With this, I feel we've gone for that same formula, but the anger phase we're in now, the blame has just been thrown at austerity and leapt over all the other processes and elements which are clearly en route to that. They've taken 1 + 1 equaled, you know, 55. It isn't, there isn't logic here in the discourse right now. It's just anger.
Yeah, and that's understandable.
I just think it's really good that we've got people like Simon Cowell out there who are able to bring a nation together with a new charity single.
Yeah. Who's it got on air?
we're going to get A Bridge Over Troubled Water.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. Have that had another charity single?
That feels like
that's like a band aid coming back.
It feels like an inappropriate just because of the water. It feels like, could they not have gone for a slightly
I don't know,
a more ambiguous song?
A Bridge Over Troubled Water. Yeah. It's got
really
that.
Hammering home that.
It's suddenly going to be the soundtrack to all the videos of The Tower.
Right.
But it's got people like Lillian, who's controversially been slating the government's actions on Channel 4 News. The Who, Liam Payne, Stormzy, Craig David.
Oh, well, Stormzy won the election single-handedly. He, working on his collaborative work with Jeremy Corbyn when discussing stopping the cuts, sharp. That was a piece of marketing genius.
He's very politically active.
So when's it out? So when can our listeners?
I don't know, but they've all been snapped. There's more, but they've all been snapped going into the recording studio in West London. So at least we've kind of got that to look forward to.
I really enjoy listening to Lily Allen. You know, I really feel that she's got so much to say. Whilst choking down her organic toast and sitting in her incredibly expensive property in Notting Hill or whichever. Ridiculously overpriced part of the world.
She's probably lent out a hammock to a victim.
Well, we don't want to lose her. We don't want to lose her as a listener. So, hi, Lily. do keep tuning in. Anyway, that's not even all we've got time for. That was 10 minutes ago. Those were the facts, and thank you both.
Task force.
So, there's been some good news.
I think it's
this week. Alex, you're a big Beyoncé fan, aren't you?
You know, I particularly just love anything that resembles a dance move that's like a wave machine crossed with a weave. It's very strong.
It's amazing. What's your favourite Beyoncé song?
All the Single Ladies.
Yes! Can you do the little pop?
I can wobble my man dress, yeah. if that's what you mean.
Well, we've had some good news this week in Beyoncé land. Do you know what's happened?
She's got children.
She already had a child.
Oh, sorry.
Blue. Ivy Blue or Blue Ivy?
I don't know. We're asking the wrong person.
There's a few Beyoncé fans listening.
Now she's got yellow and orange.
It's fucking Blue Ivy. Is that a joke?
That's a joke. That's a joke. But believable, sadly. She's had twins. Her and Beyoncé and Jay-Z.
Did she know she was having twins?
Yeah. Yeah, that was revealed a few months ago.
Okay.
See, everyone got very excited because... That's even more special, yeah. Somehow. Beyonce can do no wrong.
Did she have IVF? Because when you have IVF, it's more likely to have twins.
I don't know. I mean, we'll have to ask you. But anyway, I've had a call. I always get a call as part of Task Force.
Yeah.
Well connected.
And it's Kanye West. Kanye's called, and he just wants, like, he's a like a very like thoughtful friend, obviously, and very, like very close with the two of them.
Is he actually very close with them?
Yeah, yeah, they fell out a little bit. When,
I thought they did.
Jay-Z and Beyonce wouldn't go to their wedding, the Kimye's wedding, because it was going to be filmed, obviously. In, every element was going to be filmed. They were like, "Nah, that sounds a bit,
yeah,
a bit much."
Yeah.
And then so, but I don't know. Like, Kanye's still very concerned. So he's been thinking about it, and he wants to sort of give some advice to Jay-Z about how to raise these kids in the spotlight, how to bring up two celebrity twins in 2017. And like, Alex and Sophie, you're both very wise, experienced people. You've, like,
I think we're going to make really good parents as well.
You both,
not together, that sounds like
that's an offer.
Are you two announcing this on air that you are planning?
I am pregnant.
We're expecting
you looked at me bastard. And I became pregnant.
that's how it generally works, isn't it?
We've seen this go wrong with, like, Michael Jackson, haven't we? Bringing up kids in the spotlight. Blanket. Do you remember Blanket?
Is that his name?
That is his name, Paul.
Well, that's what they called him. Do you remember
he held
the baby over the balcony with the blanket on it. And he was like, "It's my blanket." And I was like, "No, that's a child."
Under a blanket.
I'm sure Kanye is going to be a great... indeed, he is a great parent. Has he got one? Or?
Yeah, he's got North. Nice. Northwest. And there's another one called...
Don't look at me like I know. I definitely don't know. You're way more.
I remember it's not called South because someone was like, "Is it going to be called South?" And he was like, "No, that would be stupid." So all I've got that I know about what's been going on in advance of the birth was that Beyonce and Jay-Z installed a £1 million maternity ward in their home that included an entire neonatal wing. They also invited.
So they want to donate to the Grenfell disaster.
Oh, don't politicise this.
Sorry, yeah. We've moved on.
It's Blue Ivy. They invited Blue Ivy, who's five, to attend the birth, as you would with a five-year-old.
She was a birthing partner.
So she can be part of the magical...
She's in the paddling pool, isn't
she? She's going to be their work buddy when they come out, these twins. Blue Ivy was wearing a mini nurse's uniform designed by Givenchy, which costed £780. So that's just... For the 10 minutes that the 5-year-old wants to wear.
Do you think when it was born that there was fireworks? Like a display?
I reckon someone was playing a harp. Yeah. There was just like...
Like, yeah. Just imagine this bird.
Or Andrea Bocelli is just in the room.
Nessun Dorman.
Someone doing a painting.
Yeah, painting the birth in real time.
Yeah.
They've got someone
an
else.
An impressionist and then also a more realistic
Yeah, totally.
Approach.
Or it just becomes, yeah, like that watercolour challenge. There's 20 people
Someone's
in the
Someone's making
room.
A paint by numbers for Blue Ivy.
Who painted it best? There's me with my charcoals. So
tracing paper. Over the umbilical cord.
Beyonce, I just want to do a tracing of your face.
Is that right? Just hold still.
Just
breathe through it.
Hold that grimace for me, please.
God, I've got all the pain.
I would buy that picture. Sorry. Yeah.
I've been a birthing partner.
I've got
before.
It myself. You've been a birthing partner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you splashing in the paddling pool?
No, it was nothing like that.
Did you have the net?
Did you know the person?
Yeah.
Just walked in.
Aya, can I help?
Let's do this. So you must have some advice for general sort of children then.
Well, children. I don't know. With regards to the birth thing's amazing. Like, it's like the guy that was her boyfriend, my friend who's birthing, he'd had no fucking clue what to do. Like, this like 6-foot Polish guy who was like, "Oh, Sophie, you talk." That's my really bad Polish accent.
I imagine there's some listeners that just tune in for the point that we get racist. And there's a little game that we
have.
Play
we started? I do. Someone give me the signal. I never know.
I think it was when Sophie started doing the Polish accent. They're like, "Oh,
it's my really bad voice."
33 minutes in. Yeah. they took their time this week.
No, it's really weird. It's one of those things when you just watch someone go through fucking shitloads of pain, and all you can do is, "Come on, you can do it. You can do it." And you just like, and they're like, "I am doing it." You're like, "Yep, no, nothing I can say is going to help this, but." just rallying the troops.
And then just doing an interpretive dance to distract them. And yeah, fireworks. Maybe fireworks isn't a bad idea.
I think fireworks. Distraction is good.
So we don't need advice anyway, on the birth thing.
Let's not.
The babies have been born. What would you call them? Would you call them yellow and blue? And yellow and green? Or
Horatio Nelson, the Duke of Wellington. There we go.
Well, that's using up your ones for your
You're going to donate.
Because
obviously Notoria has like a real like living, respiring child, just like a collection of scum.
You said it. Obviously, you've got some sort of conservative chip on your shoulder.
Call it chip.
I'm sure it's a strong and stable chip. So anyway, advice for Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Well, I think.
Do you want kids, Wheeler?
I mean, yeah. The nation must continue. But I don't want to talk to it until it's 10 or can smoke, whichever comes first. But you know, I think they should take a leaf out of Kanye's book and, you know, just maybe buy it some Diddy MG, Make America Great Again baseball caps. You know, maybe wave it around Trump Tower a bit. I mean, that's what I would do.
So you like use it publicity wise, like?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, that's what you do, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose they've only had the public eye for publicity, right?
That's what they do, these celebrities. It's just to, yeah, like,
to continue the saga. Okay.
We'll release the album in 2016, yeah. 2017, baby, 2018, we'll break up, 2019, we'll get back together.
And then the baby will then be old enough to be doing its own solo career.
Yeah, so like
at what point did the baby get the solo career?
So I think if we look back in the annals of history to Reverend Run, he...
What's right, okay, what's Reverend Run?
Run DMC, you know, the reality right, show on okay, MTV. Yeah.
I actually saw them recently.
So, you know, that's the seamless transition of passing on the baton from father to daughter and son. So, you know,
is he training them sort of to be little hip-hoppers?
Well, yeah, they got the little reality TV show and...
Run DMC's got a reality TV show?
He used to have one. Wow. It was a while ago, this is like 2008.
This is early days when Pimp My Ride was still about.
I love that guy. He's a wordsmith and a half. Call it what you want to call it. I'm a fucking alcoholic, I believe, was his main.
I love how you can quote those.
We always find out he's got a little penchant for trashy TVs. Is he watching the Run DMC TV show? So yeah, like, I mean, Kanye will obviously like anything that says Kanye, just tell him to do what you're doing. Kanye will love that feedback and that advice, but. I mean, do we think we should like start the careers of these kids? Do we want?
Yeah, I think one of them should be a vlogger.
Oh,
because that's really where the future is. Because essentially, it's just adverts and them talking to the camera.
I mean, obviously, at least three of them will be social justice warriors. That's kind of inevitable, I think.
Do you think?
Of course, you know, whether you're the daughter of Bill Clinton or indeed Donald Trump, you know, you've got to have a purpose to justify your immense privilege and sense of entitlement.
So maybe one could be one. Like, I think they should both be really different. So I think they need to be almost like trained to be really different.
You kind of make
people.
Them sound like dogs. I mean, I'm not saying that. Can't stress that enough. But you're making everything sound like a dog agility course.
So we know that, like, so Kanye's two babies were both credited as executive producers for his latest.
And, how did they help? They listened to the track before it went out. Went yeah.
Yeah, I imagine just there's a if it shat its pants.
And that was the affirmation everyone wanted.
That's how we picked the single. When Northwest shits himself. That's and then Blue Ivy, I believe, was featured on the latest Beyonce album.
How old is she?
I think she was featured pretty early on. I think there was some gurgling or some laugh, baby.
Yeah, or like talk to me.
Yeah, we know Beyonce said that she plays all her songs to Blue, and then the ones that Blue picks up are the ones that she's like, okay, I'm onto a good thing. So I mean,
write an advisor position sort of thing.
But so it feels like Beyonce's getting all the help she needs. Maybe we need these two new babies, Green and Yellow.
Can they rebel?
Helping Jay-Z.
So I actually called Green Yellow. I thought that was a joke.
Working title, basically. They haven't.
Fabergé.
This is
Do we want them to be complementary colours though?
Fabergé and
egg.
Fabergé alone is a great name. But then also just if there wasn't that context, just having a baby called egg, I would not put it past them.
I mean,
that's bullying for when they're older though, isn't it?
If you're going to bully Beyonce and Jay-Z's kids.
Well, I would suggest with these two is do an experiment. Sorry, this feels again like I'm training dogs, but where one of them is brought up with, and then the other one is sent away and then grows up in Australia like a normal human being.
Is that the prince and the pauper?
Yeah, a little bit like Harry Potter in some ways, but we've got twins, you can have a comparison. It's about nature versus nurture, isn't it?
So you want them to be an experiment for your amusement.
I just want
to... So first they're dogs. Now they're just
singing dog, singing
just bits of
dogs.
Collections of matter for you to carry out your Freudian desires.
I would argue that the guy or girl, the twin that gets taken away to Australia or somewhere like
to
that.
To the prison. Mm.
The
sand fortress, yeah.
to get 30 minutes of daylight every day.
And they'll be grateful for it.
Then we have sandcastles, it would be cool. But I would argue that they potentially would have a better life than a more level-headed upbringing.
Well, it depends. Are they going to be like put
the They're not going to be in a sand fortress. They could be with a nice family in Australia.
What is a sand fortress? Is it a fortress made of sand?
I didn't say it was a good fortress.
I'm thinking like a massive sandcastle. Like the sandcastles that people build in Spain on the edge of the pavement to show off.
It would require a lot of maintenance to live in that.
But that he's got his whole he or she's got his whole life.
When do we check in with them? When do we check in with Egg?
I mean, for me, so Egg would obviously be the one in the sand fortress. Fabergé would have more of my direct input.
Does Fabergé just wear lace?
So I want Fabergé to be like the son from Brideshead Revisited. You know, he wears a lot of linen and very fancy cravats, enjoys punting.
How is there not already a rapper called Fabergé? There must be.
There must be.
That's such a good name. Like the new Beyoncé single featuring Fabergé.
Which will just be the child, I think, doing a remix. I mean, Akon, I think, look at how Akon's managed to make something of himself with his auto-tune. I think Fabergé could probably get on the singing, you know, as soon as... I reckon probably one. You need to probably have a couple of...
And obviously for Egg, he would be, or she would be locked up and they wouldn't let him out of the sand fortress. See what I did there? I hate myself.
Dear Lord. Okay, so we're going to send one on an experiment to Australia. The other one's going to be the hottest rapper in town.
And then what happens in the reunion, which will be much like many of the 90s bands that have started collaborating again after many years, is when Egg meets Fabergé and they go on a road trip together, or they do a gap year together.
So we're going to just throw him in like, so... Not even do like a
reunion.
They
don't know about it.
Not even do a reunion. Would you can stick them on a road trip? And by the way, you
Thailand.
Two are twins, if you haven't already worked it out from the fact that you look exactly the same.
They might not look exactly the same, might they?
Yeah. Cause it's the...
But then even them in Thailand in like 10, well no, probably like 15, no, it would be 18 years time, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
When Thailand, I don't even know what that would be like, and then no one knows what the world would be like then, but...
Yeah.
That feels bleak. but imagine them in Thailand. I mean, Egg, I'm actually imagining as an egg, so I'm worried about the sun. Fabergé's got so many layers. Adam Shaw could just pop the cravat on his head.
Fabergé can lend some layers to Egg, and it'll be one of their first bonding moments. And be like, oh yeah, of course, they are brothers.
Well, also, like, is everyone sisters. Thinking, like, I'm thinking of Fabergé and Egg as boys, but imagine if they're both girls now, and imagine them being Fabergé and Egg as girls.
Unfortunate name for a girl, Egg.
With, like, a felt-tip pen
it's
eyes.
It's descriptive, really, isn't it?
Okay.
I'm going to draw what I think Egg would look like.
And again, Kanye will love this because this has got a TV format. He's going to love it. He's going to be like, when's the bit where this gets... Where... What are we going to call it? Fabergé meets Egg.
Yeah, that's Egg
that's,
there.
That's we'll post the photo of that later, but we've got
an artist's
interpretation of what Egg looks like. And then we'll... Alex can draw. So, we've got a show called Fabergé meets Egg. And then... We'll do like Keeping Up with the Kardashians Fabergé Egg special.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I am just drawing
Alex is just drawing a Fabergé egg, which I imagine is about to have eyes put on it, and then that's.
Sorry, you don't actually know what you're talking about. It's about to have sunglasses.
Shades.
Fabergé always wears glasses. Okay. It's because of all the bright lights from all the pap.
He's going to have a tough life. I mean, they're both going to have a tough life.
I'm really
life.
Happy I agreed to come on this hard-hitting, relevant programme.
He's going
to
have his tongue sticking out as well because
good,
he's naughty.
I'm sure, yeah.
Fabergé's so naughty.
I'm sure not only is the country going to turn against us for our uninformed commentary on the Grenfell disaster, then Beyonce's squad is going to turn on us for mocking what is the most important part of their year.
I mean, congratulations, Beyonce and Jay-Z as well. We'd like to extend
that. I'm sure that's going to mean a lot to them, yeah.
And I'm going to take these ideas back to Kanye. Is there any final advice you'd like to give to the happy couple?
I think just like don't give them too many prezzies.
Okay. I'll cancel them.
Well, Fabergé, absolutely, but...
I'd probably say to Kanye, revolt against the modern world. I think that'd be the advice I have for him.
I don't know what he'd be able to do with that.
I think
whatever he likes.
I think he would take it very literally. Anyway, thank you both for helping me with Task Force. I'll get back to Kanye.
Quiz?
The quiz.
I'm quite tired now.
Oh, now the excuses begin.
It's been a tiring one, actually. Do you know what? Caring is really tiring.
Oh, yeah. I had to read an instruction manual before I got out of my car.
About caring? About empathy.
Don't worry, next week we'll get back onto Trump or something. It'll be a lot easier.
Can we just talk about the DUP? Why are we not talking about the DUP?
I'd love to hear the accent.
No one is asking that question. Can we talk about the DUP?
No, but I'm asking that because I don't know enough.
Okay, we'll do a specialist show afterwards for the real fans of this might be the news.
We can call it, yeah. 1690, the great smashing of.
What about like the DUP in 60 seconds with Alex Wheeler?
Oh, goodness. Dear Lord. Anyway, stop derailing the
quiz. Sorry.
There's points to be won. You know how it works. Say your name if you know the answer. Question number
one. Can I be called Fabergé for this?
Yes. And
great.
So, question number one. Who won the Bash Street School election in the Beano this week? Did you ever read the Beano?
I mean, yeah, when I was, you know, back before, when John Major was in power.
No, I don't read the Beano.
I don't know, mate.
Name a character of the
Dennis Beano. The Menace.
Dennis the Menace. Don't. Yeah. Fabergé.
Second most famous.
The Doc Nasher.
After that.
Oh. Billy Bunting.
What's Billy Bunting?
Oh, no, that's the Dandy, I think.
It's a girl.
Don't know any women in Beano.
She was sort of the counterpart to Dennis the Menace.
Aww,
oh, guys, yeah. It was Minnie the Minx.
Oh, I see.
The reason I was because the Beano got involved in a bit of satire. And whereas Smithy, her main rival, just promised to do stuff, Minnie produced a giveaway manifesto that included gaming consoles, a duck for every child, a school trip to Disneyland, and the return of the dinosaurs. So I thought that was actually good on the Beano.
Yeah. Hard-hitting, I like that.
Getting involved. Question number two. What did KFC do with one of their chicken sandwiches this week?
Oh, egg.
Yeah.
They got Lethal Bizzle to promote the new Tennessee limited edition fried chicken, which has gherkins on it. Yeah.
That wasn't what I was thinking of, but you're probably right.
That's so, what you should have been thinking of.
So I guess we'll have to give a point to Alex just for
egg.
Knowing...
For understanding the KFC menu, which is...
It's actually... do you have any ideas, Soph?
No, because I just eat green beans and soya milk and lentils.
You've got to fight the
pine good nuts. In an oxygen tank.
They sent a chicken sandwich into space.
A very nice...
What the fuck? Why? What a waste of money.
Well, I know obviously you have a very harsh view of existence. You'd rather just put one of the children into space, wouldn't you? Or maybe a dog.
Egg? You can go to space.
Get out your sand fortress and get into space. Sorry, fine.
Question number three. This week, Gatwick was voted the second worst airport in the world. Which I think is unfair.
I think it's my favourite airport. Quite nice. Yeah.
What was the worst? Worst airport in the world?
Egg.
Yep.
Luton.
No, it's not in
it
the UK.
It is Luton, though.
How is Luton not worse than
Fabergé? Yeah.
Yep.
Is it like Bangkok?
No, but I mean...
Pisa? Yeah. They lose everyone's luggage, don't they?
They really did.
Dresden? Ugly architecture.
It's Kuwait.
Okay.
I've never been, I can't judge. No, but all I know is that Luton is worse than Gatwick, so...
Yeah, and Stansted is worse than Gatwick.
What the fuck, everyone? Question number four. Who joined Ed Balls for a recreation of Gangnam Style this week?
Michael Gove, because he's Michael Gove knows what he's just laying out smash hit after smash hit of excellent righteous opinion, so he's cool.
I think he's despicable.
you look so weary.
Do you like Gove?
I'm just like, I've got Gove
fan.
Gove makes me feel sick.
I think he's awful.
I mean, it does look like his head has no bones.
Don't back down now.
I'm not backing down.
Do you like him?
Of course I do, yeah.
He's going to fuck the environment like he fucked our schools. And then
fuck that conspiracy theory
just in time for his contract with Strictly Come Dancing to start. That's what he's lining up. You know, he'd love to be on Strictly. He'd love to be invited on Strictly. He'd give it all in. Question number five. What did Brits do less of on polling day?
Voting. Sorry.
conforming. Buying a bullshit.
Fabergé.
Yep.
Putting on sun lotion.
No.
Feeling any sense
this,
of...
This poll station cannot wait.
Everyone's just outside squirting sun cream.
Throw caution to the wind and head outside. It was watching porn. Everyone watched less porn on polling day.
Wow. I can't speak for that being accurate. I think I needed more.
Imagine you waking up slightly more aroused on polling day than a normal
rubbing
day.
Rubbing your legs to the sound of the polls coming in.
I smell austerity.
That is true. And obviously then I went out and stole some children.
You couldn't help. The rubbing the hands turned of the rubbing of them.
Anyway, this is all we've got time for, and this might be the news this week. Thank you both, and congratulations to Egg for winning.
Well done, Egg.
The quiz.
Thanks for having
Flawless
us.
Victory.
Listeners, thanks as always for tuning in. We'll see you all next week.
May.